Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health Science and Energy Show. Late night show, August 11th, 2007. Tonight we're going to have a couple of interesting things go on here. As you know, this is not the live show, but it's a good show. The earlier show wasn't on tonight. It was a rerun because I'm not around. I'm birthdaying it. Anyway, this first tape starts out with me in front of a group talking about Jay-Z Knight, how I met her, and that was back in the late 70s, early 80s. I think it was late 70s, and we're in the Portland Hilton Hotel, and this little lady comes up and kept looking at the pyramids. In those days, we had a radome, a power dome, and a paradome, and we saw the whole thing for $40. You can't even buy a paradome for that now. With gold prices gone from $125 an ounce to $600, made a big difference in the price, six times. But anyway, she kept staring at the pyramids, and she didn't. She was not the famous Jay-Z Knight then that she is now. So finally, I got her over there to the booth, and I said, "You know, ma'am, I think you should try one of these pyramids on." Now, we're talking about a very straight-laced, little blue-eyed blonde lady. You know, very, very attractive, very petite, and very interested, but had no idea what pyramid energy was, knew nothing about Ramtha at the time. And so she came over and tried a pyramid on, and she didn't know what to think of it, basically. And so then she ended up buying all three of them, and the rest is history. So, and then the second tape, where it's a UFO panel, starts out with a physicist, Stanton Friedman, who you see on TV a lot. And this is the panel, the UFO panel, is hosted by a lady named Tricia from Alabama. So anyhow, without any further goofing around, we're going to get Dr. Bell going here. Dr. Bell, talk about Jay-Z Knight. Where are you, Dr. Bell?
$40.
There you are.
You know, she wore those things 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, there she is wearing
her hormone structure around.
Her hormone structure did change.
Ramtha, you know, Ramtha's walking around and saying, you know, it's all due to the pyramid. She didn't understand. She starts writing about it kind of blindly. But I'll tell you what, she picked up a hell of a following and made a lot of money by trying out something after getting her rear end shoot at a health show in Portland, Oregon in 77.
I did kind of jump on it a little bit and say, what are you so bashful about here, you know?
When I was in the Air Force, I used to smoke 2 packs a day. And I quit smoking. I get out of the Air Force. It was 59. I left the Air Force. No, it was 60 I got out. I didn't know. 61 I got out. 61, the first spring of 61 is when I left the Air Force. And I first put the pyramid on in 1975, and I didn't know that I'd be wearing one. I developed the pyramid, but didn't develop to wear it. I developed a gold pyramid to be unidirectional. I didn't know I was developing a pyramid to wear. So when I put it on the head, I started noticing a real foul smell in my urine. And all this nicotine that had been built up years ago started coming out of my brain. I wasn't even smoking in those days. I hadn't smoked in many, many years. I quit smoking about 66, I guess 67. When I left NASA, I quit smoking. And here it was 10 years later almost, and I'm going to the bathroom and it smells like nicotine because all this stuff was coming out. I mean, these are paths along the way. This was a guy down in Newport Beach started putting it on people's heads. A guy named Gary Couture was a chiropractor, and he had a place on West Cliff Drive, and he ran clinical studies on it. We put them on heads of students. We found that their intelligence increased. In other words, their cognition of what's going on around them increased. I got a phone call. We put them in a. We started working with students that were having impairities. In 1970, I guess it was 1978, I got a phone call from this guy from Orchid Union. It was Orchid Union School? No, it was, up in San Luis Obispo, up in that area. This guy, Sky Lewis, calls. 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm getting a call from a school teacher. He says, "Hey." No, I says, "Why are you calling me?" He's all emotional. He says, he put this pyramid on this kid, one of his students, that was having grand mal seizures and was dyslexic. And he says the kid wore it for about 30 days. And all of a sudden, in school, on that very day, after playing around with it for 30 days, he didn't have a seizure all day long. And he could read normally. And I got a testimonial notarized in my testimonials that this kid, Stan Alms, written in his own handwriting properly from left to right, didn't have seizures anymore. And he says, "I don't understand how these pyramids work." He says, "The radome makes me feel normal." And I thought that was pretty, you know, things like that have happened in my life, and they were just side effects of what this is all about. So I'm telling you to look into this stuff and explore it and not take it lightly, because it's fun, but it's intriguing, but it also does many things. I can only explain on the surface about half the things that I do. Yeah. A pyridome is a gold-plated one, and you wear it on your head, and if you hook yourself to a biofeedback machine, it puts you in an alpha state instantly. I mean, like right now. You don't have to know how to meditate. It's calming. And that was the first one we made. And our market at that time was the drug addict, the biggest drug addict in America, which is the American Housewife on Valium. And so we took a lot of people off Valium. And I'll tell you something, when you take somebody off Valium on a pyramid, they get a lot of withdrawal symptoms. Valium will disfigure a person if you're on too much of it. That is a nasty little drug. I didn't realize how bad the pharmaceutical industry was killing people until I worked with Valium addicts putting pyramids on their heads. You know, we had to put them on vitamin C and water and all kinds of stuff. It was really amazing. I'm just showing you at the same time some cosmic stuff, but I'm also showing you that I've been in the field of medicine for a long time, and I've learned all this cosmic stuff by working with grounded effects on an ailing or distressed human body. That's the only place I get the answers from. I don't get it from the cosmos. Sannyasi taught me a lot of stuff, but she made me work with people and learn all this stuff. Now, if you were to go into the carbon atom in the body, for example, and look at it, you'd find it just like the pyramid. And this energy, this is the concept of the legoic plane, the ethnic plane, modanic plane, the intuitive, and all the different planes of consciousness represented by a color, as we discussed, and a feeling, would be located in a chamber inside the Great Pyramid, or the carbon atom in your body. And why did God choose a carbon atom? Why even more, if I took the carbon atom out of the body, right? And I took that carbon atom out of the body, and I made it as big as the pyramid in Egypt, right? Real interesting comparison here. I'll show you. If I took the pyramid out of the body, the carbon atom, and looked at the base, right? If I took the distance of two sides of it, right? The pyramid inches, like it is in Egypt, right? I come out with 12,913.75 pyramid inches around here. If I took the entire base of the pyramid in pyramid inches, I would come out with 25,827.5 inches. So that means that the carbon atom, the pyramid, duplicates its exact rotation around the Pleiades perfectly within a quarter of a year. That's more accurate than our calendars are. We have to have leap year. And at the same time, the ancients knew this. Obviously, the Pleiadians built the pyramid. In 2170 B.C., the Pleiades were on the meridian at exactly midnight, and were seen through the south passageway of the pyramid. So what that means, metaphysically, is that this atom vibrates one time around the Pleiades in the waking consciousness, and it transcends the whole scene. We begin to move out, and this is no longer visible. We can become invisible. We can still remain intact, but this has reached another higher vibrational level, or another octave, you might say. A lot of interesting different characteristics and observations were made. Back this up a little bit now. Here I've drawn some of the different planes and showing the colors. The particles of each plane come down. When the particle comes here, as just as it enters the physical plane, science gave it a name. Call it quarks. And they started giving quarks names like up, down, justice, beauty, truth, psychological names, because science finally realized, normal science finally realized, that the observer and the experiment were becoming one and the same, and they interacted off each other. Now I'm back up to the red blood cell again.
I've got to show you something here. It's very important. First of all, when you take a breath of air in, you're bringing in an oxygen, a certain amount of oxygen. How many of you ever took an iron frying pan and you shine it up real good and it gets real bright and shiny? You know about that, right? And you let it sit in the air for a few minutes, right? And when it sits for a few minutes in the air, what happens to it? It gets rusty, right? It dulls. Just like if you cut yourself, the blood turns brown when it comes out in the oxygen, right? Now that's chemically how the red blood cell works in the body. You've just shined a frying pan and you've shot it full of oxygen, call it a platelet if you want. You bring it down into the body and it reaches the cell that's burned out. It has lots of carbon dioxide in it. By enzyme action, instead of creating rust, the oxygen is pulled off this platelet and the carbon dioxide is brought down on it again. That's the enzymic action of blood. And it's brought back out and it reaches the air again. Enzymes release it and this carbon dioxide goes off into the plant kingdom and oxygen from the plant kingdom comes back into the body. Okay? Enzymes are incredibly important. The alpha chain, the beta chain are very important. That's why in formulations, in nutrition, we put things like B15, B12, all the nitrilocytes in there. B12 through B17, I always use all of them in the formula. Why? Because they produce huge amounts of oxygen. What does cancer feed on? Anybody know? Lack of oxygen, right? Lung cancer. You breathe the air in your lungs, you can't get it out because the walls are blocked. Creates a condition in the body. So it's very important to have these enzymes. Why do you think the FDA says we don't want you to have B15? We sure as hell don't want you to have B17. Why? Because your bodies won't get any oxygen anymore, because where are you going to get B17 and B12 from? You won't get it from your foods because they strip it all off your foods. It's all stripped. It's gone. It's history. It's not there anymore. So that's why we put it back in our formulas. You just have to know how to put it in and not get in trouble for it. When the FDA came over and said, well, we noticed you got B15 in there, but it's okay. I explained to them why I had it in there and everything. And then they offered me a job. It's how you approach them. But you got to realize the word carcinogenic doesn't exist in your vocabulary if you have the proper amount of oxidants in your body. It's very important. So this is the flow of energy, oxygen-wise, through the body. Now let's look at it again. Okay, now we've talked about the enzymes in the ferric transition, which is a valence change that causes us to move the carbon dioxide out and the oxygen in. Now let's look at the four iron atoms, the four pyramids, the four octahedrons that are the heart of the human being. In the plant kingdom, by the way, they are three-sided. Chlorophyll. Three-sided tunes you more on the mental plane, but way off the physical plane. In the blood specimens of the grays, they are also three-sided, just like the plant kingdom. They assimilate different. They are more on the mental plane, but much weaker on the physical and much weaker on the spiritual. So you've got to have an understanding of your geometry. And I'll explain to you what that means. If we have seven levels of consciousness in the existence of the cosmos, each one of those seven levels is shown by an initiatory chamber in the Great Pyramid. The Great Pyramid, when Christ took his initiations in here, he had one experience for every seven levels of consciousness inside the pyramid there was. Until he reached the King's Chamber and had an experience of God. In the Queen's Chamber, he had an experience of Aphrodite, the female aspect. And all these different experiences. Experiences of temptations in the lower ones. This is when he was studying in Heliopolis. That means that the Great Pyramid has in it the essence of the consciousness, does it not? How could you not have the experience in there if the essence wasn't there, right? You just made it up, right? Well, everything is mine, so you could say, yeah, I made it up, so that's another chamber. But it's not the main one. Now, if this then is the carbon atom, and the carbon atom is a human race, and these gases that we talked about, hydrogen, for example, are wrapped around it, then we look over here, and here's one here, and here's one here, and one here, and one here. In each area of the carbon atom is one of these levels of consciousness. And when you thread those carbon atoms throughout the body, which are in the shape of iron, their density of iron through the red blood cell, and you corkscrew, because it spins, these platelets spin, that's why they're round, you corkscrew this consciousness, by centrifugal force alone, you whip this consciousness through the body. And when you whip this consciousness through every single cell in the body, which requires blood, which all of them do, you whip consciousness into your body. In other words, you animate your body by your blood, by this principle. And if you're centered in that shape, if you're a geometrical shape, then you have been created in the image of God. But if you are, your threading device lacks a corner, you're not threaded by God. You have been created by a genetic mutation somewhere else in space and somewhere else in time, and you can be dealt with by God. So you get a little heavier now, understanding how the form is animated. You get the picture now. So when we subject ourselves to stress, being in that form, the geometry of God, and having that confidence, we'll attack anything through love, peace, and harmony, because we can digest plants and create carbon atoms and red blood cells in our body, can we not? The Renticulans are afraid of people like me, and they'll be afraid of people like you when you understand what this is all about. Any questions so far? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The point is that the carbon atom contains consciousness of life. Each section of the carbon atom, by its geometric shape, each portion of it, contains an exit, an entrance point. For example, the third ray, the Holy Ghost energy, comes right off about here, which is on the dollar bill. It's the seeing eye of the dollar bill, which is a symbol of the United States. Okay? Each one of those consciousnesses that we've talked about that exist in the universe, in all of space and time, are represented inside the carbon atom. The carbon atom goes through the body in a chain, in disguised as an iron atom, in a red blood cell, and this rubs off on every single cell in the body, giving it life. This is life. Because life is a combination of all seven planes of consciousness in mutual agreement. And it gives the spirit a temple to live in. But also direction is important. To spiral up towards life, you go clockwise. To spiral down, you go counterclockwise. It's real simple to see how your polarities are. Stand up for a second. I'll show you a real simple exercise. Okay? Everybody face straight ahead. Okay? In fact, put your arms up and stretch a little bit. Okay, and then turn to the right and give a person a massage on the shoulders. And I'll go over here. Okay, now turn around and do the person behind you. Need a little massage too, right? See, getting back into the body again, huh? Okay, now stand by your seat. Still stand. Okay, now close your eyes for a second. Everybody, close your eyes and relax. Okay? Now make a quarter turn, just a quarter turn, any way you want, whatever feels right. Okay, now stop and open your eyes. Now, how many of you went to the right? How many of you went to the left? See the difference? Okay, sit down. To go up towards consciousness, if your chakra system is running naturally, you'll turn to the right clockwise. Like when you pull the cork out of a drain, it goes one direction, clockwise, and south of the equator, counterclockwise. Your body's made out of water. You should turn in the direction the water goes naturally. If you're not turning in the right direction, it only means that one of your chakras is running backwards. Look at the chakra system or the endocrine glands. There's a vibration spinning something this way, another one spinning here, seven times. And the force interacting, which is called Ida Pigalle, this interacting force being a flow up through the spine of central nervous energy. You know, I hit myself on the head, or I can feel that up through the spine, right? This resilient force of energy going up and down is got a natural flow. If one of your chakras is running backwards, if you're interpreting a color wrong, bam, what happens? What happens is very simple. You'll turn the wrong direction. Watch in the old movies from the 20s and 30s and 40s, dancers, which way they turn in most movies. And you'll see where the polarity of most of Hollywood was in those days. And now I'm going to jump down into devices now. A little heavier into I've given you a basic understanding, I think, pretty quickly of how the body works. Everybody feel like they've felt something new? This is Ralph Sierra, an old friend of mine. He left the planet, but he used to do a lot of magnetic and pyramid therapy. If you had an athlete with a trick knee or something, you'd send him down to him. This was the beginning of the scalar wave technology patents, which is a lot of the technology we use now, which is where they took pictures of bugs in Vermont back in 1947. And the pictures of the bugs were down in crops that were blighted by insects. And they took these pictures and they put them in a black box and they'd kill all the, and with an insecticide, and they would kill all of the bugs in the pictures at a remote distance. This is the Hieronymus effect. This was a negative application for scalar wave technology, but this is how it started. And it was patented back in 47. A lot of our equipment works off of old Hieronymus patents. This device here is called an irradiator. You'll see it on our booth out there. There's a little green booklet that you can get that explains how it works. Basically, it generates scalar waves. You can program it. In a self-help system, you can cause the irradiator, put a book in the bottom of it, point it in your bed when you go into your astral body at sleep at night. It will integrate the energy into your astral body, and you'll assimilate it. That's a simple application. We use these things in stages. We use 4 irradiators or 6 irradiators in a system to create effects. When we use 4, it's called a quad system. Quad systems are used to program events around the world. You can use it to enrich your life. There are people that came to my seminars every year that add systems to their life, and their lives change in bizarre ways. Kinds of people that use these systems are all over the world. One system was in Hawaii. A guy named Ron Spencer had it. It was a 7 radiator system. I've got a picture of it. He ended up on TV with it. He programmed it to do something. Matter of fact, his wife gave birth to a child in the system. The Dalai Lama came over and saw it. He said, this is the science of the second coming, previous to the second coming, the science. This is in the Vedas. So he gave Ron $10,000 and he went to Tibet. And Ron called me up on the way and he says, guess where I'm going? I said, I don't know. He says, Tibet. I says, you are? And he says, yeah. He says, the system did it. I says, oh, it did? And then he told me what happened. He says, guess the program. And it was pretty easy. He wanted to go to Tibet. Yeah. This is one that's very popular. This is great for ELF. This device, you'll see it on our booth out there, has a ground wire on it. It takes all the different energies that come in and cancels them into one energy field and sends them into the ground. Whenever you use positive devices like the irradiator, you want to use something like the Star Orb, ground out the negative, because when you create a positive, you're going to create a negative, but you don't destroy the negative, you put it back into the earth. Yeah, the earth can absorb it, because it absorbs it through the planets. This is a larger version of it, called a Devastar, which we used in high-rise buildings. And this one, they chromed one of these, and they used it in the James Bond movie, Moonraker, as a device to get rid of the naked invisibles, like a cloaking device. It was done in science fiction, but it was based on some real true principles. Okay, this is in the house at home. These are the scalar waves that are being generated here, as you can photograph it. And they come up here and they burst off. They burst off in a diamond shape. And if you ever look at some of these Pleiadian ship pictures, you'll see the same energy field. And this field gets bigger, and it's like a trapezoid from the side and from the end. So it's a burst of diamond energies. And you'll see it in the old drawings on old Tibetan carpets and stuff, you'll see the same energy because they did it in two-dimensional graphics. You can see it actually pumping up there. Here it is coming up more intense. And we use a lot of crystal with this, with these systems. This is the meditation pyramid inside here. It's very important, by the way, to sleep in a pyramid now, because in 1929, when WLW, the Voice of Cincinnati, went on the air, they killed all the crops and vegetation within a five-mile radius. They had 500,000 watts of power. The FCC stepped in and said, we want you to knock your power down to 50,000 watts, which is all they're allowed to have today. So we found that when I was at Pyramid Power 5 out of Santa Monica back in the early 70s, before 75, we made a science kit with a pyramid in it, and we had brine shrimp in it because they're like a single cell in the body. And what we did is we would sell through May Company in different stores this little pyramid that you'd put together out of wood and these shrimp eggs. And you'd hatch these shrimp, and you put one hatched group inside the pyramid, and you'd put another one 10 feet away. The one inside the pyramid would live over a year because they weren't getting any radiation, and the ones that were 10 feet away would die in 6 to 8 weeks. So that's why it's important to sleep in the pyramid. I could go way beyond that, but I mean, that was the very basics. That's why you see the big pyramid. I've been sleeping in one for 16, 17 years. How many of you, when you go to sleep at night, you jerk, you know? That's ELF or microwave or radiation hitting you. You won't get that, never, when you sleep in a pyramid. No, ours don't. We use a gold capstone. Yeah, very important. We use zinc anodized gold and nickel, primarily, and mild steel. This is the radar that I was working on when I was in the Air Force on the UFO program. This is Point Arena Air Force Station in Northern California as we were building it. Every night, we used to see on this FPS-6 set here, in this FPS-35 up here, 5 megawatts of power in your backyard. We used to throw eggs up in front of them and they'd fry them. This is 9 stories tall. This thing here, sometime one night we scrambled. We saw a saucer come in, right? Out of Hamilton Air Force Base, we scrambled some jets. And guess what it was? It wasn't a saucer at all. It was a Greyhound bus going down Highway 1. Because what happened is the wave of the radar hit a cloud. Cloud caused it to bounce back in the fog and hit this bus. And they vectored in on it with a local search radar off the jets, and they found our radar was off track, and the bogey was this bus at 3 o'clock in the morning. Do you realize when you're home, and you're living down the road, and the radar is supposed to shoot out over your head, and all of a sudden one night there's a propagation from a heavy layer of energy, you know, like a fog bank or something, and that 5 megawatts goes into your bedroom? You think that doesn't happen? How many of you ever had your stereo on? It goes beep, beep every once in a while. That's radar hitting your stereo system. They didn't shoot them up. They found out what it was. They just flew by it. I mean, they didn't blow the bus off the highway, but they found it. A lot of times, we'd scramble for all kinds of stuff. That ANFPS-6 right there, that banana-shaped thing. This here is a height set. This would tell us how high they were. And this here, these two, FPS-8 and 35, tell us how far they were, how far out to sea they were. And this here is an ANFPS-26. It wasn't finished yet. This movie that we're doing, getting ready to do, called The Promise, there's a scene in there about this Air Force station and my experiences with that. Sleep in a pyramid? That'll help a lot. That's what I do. Yeah, the whole bed. Yeah. Yeah, no, you don't have to have a covered pyramid. You just have to have the frame. First got the idea back in the 60s, they tried to x-ray the pyramid for the Great Pyramid for hidden chambers, and it wouldn't penetrate more than an inch or two. Because the pyramid takes all the microwave and it puts it into standing waves that are harmonious to the carbon atom in your body, so you get energy off of it. Yeah. Yeah. We make a 10-foot size. Back up here. That's the spaceship I worked on with Wernher von Braun. That went to the moon. The second stage of the Saturn. We pulled that out like that. We took pictures of it. It was the night after this picture was taken. The saucer came there and sealed beach. 400 people saw it. These are pictures of pyramids on Mars. The big thing about the Martian pyramids is the face. It's the Sphinx. It's the female energy saying, be careful. And they painted it on the Earth, on the Mars, so the people of Earth could realize it. Because the Sphinx is female. John the Baptist, Holy Ghost, the female aspect, water. That's why the Sphinx is sitting by the Nile River. And the Nile River is the only river north of the equator that runs to the north. All the rest of them run south. There's a message there. It has to do with the atmosphere. This is a healing machine that I developed. the X1. What we did with this thing, there's none in production now. We just built a prototype a long time ago. This was part of the propulsion systems of a Pleiadian ship, but I didn't know at the time. We were using it for analysis. These generate rays of energy here. And what we do is we take a person, we want to check the cellular structure of the body. So we center this. There's seven different subcolors of red. And we have the person look at this red beam like a TV screen. And we have their hand in a Corellian camera. And we take a picture of the electrical changes in the Corellian aura of the body with the energy coming in with the light and the sound. There's the sound that goes with it. We use this therapy in our music now, by the way. Then what happens is if the person's colorblind, they don't have to say, I think that's green up there when it's red. We don't care what they say because their body tells a story. We don't hear nothing out of their mouth. Then we put it in green, shoots right off the thyroid gland in the body, analyzes all of that. And then we go to violet, and we get a reading there. And that gives us an entire sweep of the hydrogen atom. So from a gaseous standpoint, we've analyzed every gas and every cell in the body. Then they get in this table here, and then you apply therapy and stuff to them. It's real interesting how it works. Entirely different. Radionics is only the phase of which, these are the gases, radionics is only a phase of transmuting this kind of energy through the ethers without a medium. In other words, it would appear to go from point A to point B without traveling through free space. It comes from the inside like that. That's radionics. This is using a beam, a visible beam. This is a model of the time machine as we were putting it together. I'm going to skip through a lot of these because I'm not doing a lecture on. That was the time machine as we started to build. That was the superstructure as we started to put it together. The main thing it had to house a big tube in the center where energy was. That went in the future, right out of dimension. The new one that I've developed, this will be another one. This is an interesting story. I asked Semyasi what this was because this was taken by a picture, a friend of mine in 1943. She says, are you ready for no space and no time? I said, Semyasi, is that Howard Hughes' ship or something? Because it was taken in 43, the year I was born, right? And she says, no. She says, look at it a little bit more. And I started recognizing this. It's exactly like my time machine. I says, well, what is that? And she says, well, think about it. She said, what's your next time machine that you build going to do? I says, it's going to be lifting off from the ground because to go into the past, it's an echo, but you can get entombed in the ground if the structure of the earth was different, so therefore we have to have altitude. And she says, where would you go on your maiden voyage of a craft of that nature that could fly in the past? Where would you go first? What would be the safest step that you would go into? She says, that's a picture of your ship that you'll build in the future, making its maiden flight in 1943, taken at White Sands, New Mexico by Dan Fry. And she says, when you understand that, you'll understand about space and time. They teach heavy lessons.
That's pretty good stuff there. Anyway, now we will switch over to the lecture we are going to hear. This is a UFO panel by Tricia McCallum hosting, and it's going to start off with Mr. Stanton Friedman. And the question that's been asked him is, what about government cover-ups? That's what the whole point of this is. So now this is his answer. It's quite interesting. Very interesting. Come on, Stan.
No woman has ever been raped, or man for that matter, in the real world. Any woman or man who says they were raped is either a liar or is mentally ill. Now, can you imagine if that was the government's official policy about the idea of rape? The uproar. Society would say, what damage you're doing to these people who have been through these upsetting experiences. That's the effect of the government cover-up. On human beings. I hope it ends, and it's, as far as I can see, it's crumbling to little pieces as we sit here. Thank you very much.
One thing I would say along those lines, how many of you saw last October on the anniversary night of the War of the Worlds, that special airing of that TV show where they simulated the comet that was coming to hit Earth? What was the name of that? Does anybody remember? For those of you who did not see it, I'm sure they'll play it again, but they did it on a Sunday night, and it was so incredibly done. My mother, you know, who's like My family, you know, I live in the Bible Belt down there. And, you know, I've been speaking on this stuff for several years. So my mother in the beginning, of course, thought I was a little crazy, was without warning. She called me up and said, "Tricia, the aliens are coming." She was watching this television show, and it was so authentically done with CNN. And, I mean, I think they had, like, Tom Brokaw. Or, I mean, they had gotten the big guns in to simulate this whole thing. And the only way you knew it was fictional is on the commercial break, they put this little disclaimer that said, "This is a fictional program, da-da-da-da-da." But it was done with all the skeptics and all the, you know, the scientists who said, "Yo, these are not comets. These are intelligently guided craft," and so forth. And it was very, very interesting, because I think it was like, you know, they were testing the public. It's exactly what they were doing to see how what our reaction would be. Yes. Did you all hear that? She said here in Seattle, the next day the police had over 200 phone calls from people thinking that it was real. Now the difference is that we weren't jumping out of buildings. As Sean said, we were probably going, "Save us, save us." You know, in 1938 when they played War of the Worlds, people were like freaking out and jumping out of buildings. And so we really have shifted a consciousness in a tremendous way in the last two generations. We still have two wonderful people to cover, and I know we want to get to questions. So, Vance, if you would hop up here and take 5 minutes, and then Fred five, then we'll write your questions down. I also want to send around a mailing list. If you would please just start down here and put your name and address. Anybody here who has any literature and you'd like to be on their mailing list, we'll include you, okay, if you would start that. And please put my notebook in the back in the end. I don't want it to be lost. Here from Vance.
Welcome to the year of change, 1995. It's going to happen. We were told in 1990 that it was going to occur, and I think everyone here on the committee or on the panel agrees that it's going to occur. This is the year. I'll read some for you. Some of you may not know who I am or what I did. In July of 1990, a group of six U.S. Army intelligence specialists from the 701st MI Brigade, 713th MI Battalion in Augsburg, Germany, deserted their post and returned to the United States in anticipation of Armageddon. Yeah, right. Never before in the history of the United States military establishment has a group of soldiers deserted at the same time and together for any reason. 8 days later, the six were captured in Gulf Breeze, Florida. Does everybody know what Gulf Breeze, Florida is famous for? Yes. I hope so. And held at various military facilities where they were subjected to 3 weeks of questioning and investigation under suspicion of desertion and espionage. They were subsequently released without further action and given honorable discharges from the Army. And as Robert Dean here and some of the other people here on the panel can tell you, this does not occur in the military.
I belong in jail.
Probably for what? It's 3 to 30 years you can get for doing this, especially with the top security clearance that I held and my five other friends. I was an analyst, and I was very good at my job. I received awards. But we stumbled into something that we didn't like. How many people are here, our ex-military or current military? I want to read something to you. You'll recognize this. "I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And I give this oath under God, to God." Do you recognize that, military people? Doesn't say president, doesn't say Congress. It's a piece of paper that we die for in the military. We were tired and we got information, and yes, we used an Ouija board among other things, hypnosis, self-hypnosis, everything you can think of, and found out a lot of information about aliens and everything else and about things that were going to occur in the next few years. How many people saw me on sightings or on Evening Magazine here in the Seattle area? A few of you. I talked about Mount Rainier, where you all live pretty close to. I believe, and I said in 1993, that it would occur and that mountain would blow between 1993 and 1995. Since then, how many people have heard about all the military trucks and the testing they've done on the mountain there? The latest NASA photo shows that mountain is very hot.
Okay? They flew the shuttle over there. You all remember that? They were checking it. Something's happening. You see more earthquakes in the area. And you guys had a doozy here, what, a month, 2 months ago? A different one, 5.2. Yeah, I was 15 miles away. It felt interesting to me because I didn't grow up in earthquakes. a lot of things are going to occur this year, and this is just the year. I want to make a comment on something that we were told in 1990 that would occur. We believed it would occur before 1996. How many people here like Clinton? President Clinton? A few of you? A few of you do. Okay. He has a job to do. He has a job to do, people, and that's why he is not out of office or murdered or anything else. I believe it is his job to bring to you, the public, the truth about UFOs and aliens. He will be blamed and hated for it by many, many people, but that's his job. He's already done it on radiation, and the government and Congress is actually pushing Roswell more than they've ever pushed it before. And with the new internet and the computers and everything else, they can't hide anymore. There's too much information that people can find out. So what do? CYA. How many people know what that is? Cover your ass. Okay? They can't lie anymore. You're living in a period of time that's going to be chaotic, scary, but exciting as hell. It's going to be neat. We are told, and believe it or not, this is exactly what it says. U.S. government admits knowledge of other life forms. And this is by 1996. Then it says, government will introduce the first alien to the public during a difficult time and a time of need. And it says in there, be careful who you shake hands with. Do you agree everybody has an agenda? Okay? The aliens do too. Okay? I believe, and this is just my personal belief, they need us. We don't need them. We're a very unique and special race in the world. I believe we have been genetically altered and messed with over the centuries, and we're mutts of the universe. I'm dead serious. We're the mutts of the universe. And what's interesting with that is we have abilities and things that we can't even fathom that we can do. But you know who knows? They know. And they're waiting us for us to take our responsibility back. How many people have not taken the responsibility? When I went AWOL and deserted, it was our decision to take our responsibility back in our own hands and hopefully to bring about a change in this country, because I believe the United States, the greatest country in the world, will lead the world to the next level, to the Aquarian age of true freedom and true belief and true power. And that's self-knowledge and self-knowing of who and what we are and what we're here to do. I'm going to leave that. I do have a workshop tonight that we get into all the predictions that we got that are still occurring, darn it. When I saw the explosion in New York City go off, I actually said, oh, shit. And just like anybody else would. Hey, it's happening. And we're in it. Let's try to take it and go with the flow. Thank you. I'll talk about more. And I hope you guys enjoy the rest of the show, and welcome to Seattle, and welcome to the new change in the change of the year, 1995.
Thanks, Vance. I do want to be able to leave some time for questions, so we're going to have Fred for 5 minutes, and then while you're writing questions, I'm going to talk a little bit then, so we kind of squish it together. Fred Lee.
Trisha, I'm surprised you didn't say Fred's going to have 3 minutes now. We start from one end and go to the other, and the time just gets compressed. Well, how many of you remember me from last year? Oh, good, a lot of strangers in here that don't remember me. Yeah, I came up last year and had a great time and introduced myself and didn't actually get thrown out of this town. Had a good response. And a lot of things have happened since the things that I spoke about last year were going to happen, and they're going to have actually happened. I've been a contactee of the Pleiadians since about 1971 till 1989, about 19 years. Before that, I was one of them in the government for about I was sitting down there figuring it out. It was about 13 years from the time I worked at the University of Michigan on government grants to the time I worked at NASA, the time I was in the Air Force. So all of this came into play in my later life when I became a contactee. During that time, I was also a disciple of some Tibetan masters to learn about the importance of the aura field and importance of meditation and balance and these kinds of things. The knowledge that was transmitted to me by the Pleiadians is well engaged now into this planet. The Pleiadians weren't as political as the Andromedans, who are our most recent group to communicate with. But the Pleiadians began to warn us of certain things that would come in the changes, meaning two things. One, the association of the federal government and secret governments of the world with a group called the Greys, which you'll hear about, and how they would attack us. First, they would make us aware of the environmental problems that we would have, things like the ozone layer, and then they would attack our society in a very quiet manner, primarily through the immune system, and try to put us to sleep. So that by the time the real guys, the friendly guys, started making themselves announced, a lot of people wouldn't be in exactly good physical shape or spiritual or mental shape to really deal with the truth. And this is some of the things that you can see now. With the Pleiadian science, we began to work with people on the immune system with individual devices and methods to bring you into one with your own physical universe, meaning your own physical self, your own temple. Then as we progressed with that, we went into what's called a systems technologies, where we began to teach people not only about their aura fields and how they interact with the Earth and the planets, but also about things about reincarnation, how to identify your past life. The Tibetans, for example, identify the Dalai Lama when he's a young child. The Pleiadian Society teaches us how to have a life more abundant, how to identify our children before they're even here taking their first breath. At the same time, they taught us how to build the immune systems up and the strength with a child when she's in the mother's womb so that that child won't be destroyed when it takes its first breath on this planet. And when you realize that the human DNA is 48 base pairs per turn, which gives you the quality of life that you're going to express, how fast it deteriorates, when you're born you only have 34 base pairs per turn, or 25% of your DNA is destroyed from crossing the blood-brain barrier of the human placenta and taking the first breath on this atmosphere in the Earth. So you lose 25% of your life when you take your first breath on this planet. When you're 18 years old, for example, you're down to 18 to 20 base pairs per turn. You've aged 50%. They made these things apparent, but they showed us how to reverse these trends. And from these habits, when you go in to see your doctor's not going to say, well, I'm diagnosing you as having cancer now, but that's okay because your grandmother had it and your great-great-grandfather had it. It runs in the family. We don't want to hand down the poor DNA factors. And we want to do is you want to go to our doctor, and the doctor's going to say, you're in perfect health. You're going to live another 25, 30, 50 years. You know, we want to hear this because your father is healthy. And, we are the fathers, and we are the mothers. And we are the ones that are going to extend, by biochemistry and better living, this life expectancy into our planet. 12,000 years ago, the Greys were here during the destruction of Atlantis. And during those times, the human beings had a tremendously long lifespan. If you remember Methuselah, he lived like 600, 700 years. But during what were called the DNA wars and the scalar wave wars in the Atlantean times, the Greys once again were here during another cycle of the Earth and its revolution around the Pleiades, which is part of these 2,000-year ages called Piscean Age, Aquarian Age. And they interfered, as they try to do now, and shortened our DNA. So now we have this DNA reversal. One of the things I talked about was the DNA wars that was about this time last year. And I said, by the end of the year, people are going to be quite aware of the DNA and the nature of its effect and consciousness. Well, guess what? What's happening right now to the planet and DNA awareness and why? So these are some of the things that I had talked about that are coming to pass. I've also, since I've seen you last, started a radio show. I don't know if any of you are on the East Coast, but I'm in Whale Radio now, which is 990 on the AM dial at 12 o'clock on Wednesdays, which covers the states of New York, Providence, Rhode Island, Boston. So I have a big East Coast show now to share this with. I also have, for those of you that don't know me, a copy of The Promise Book, which Brad Steiger and I wrote together, which is a story of my 18, 19-year relationship with the Pleiadians. And one other thing that happened this year, which was really funny, because I am sort of ex-government, I do have a lot of friends that are still active in the what you'd call it the CIA, although the CIA has broken up a bit. And there's some renegades in there now, just like there's renegades out here. One of the interesting things that happened, you talk about interface with the agencies and spaceships. There's one group of four of these, what I call renegade agents, that have in captivity here in the western United States about an 80-foot-long cigar craft that crashed, they found, and they never turned it in to their superiors. As a matter of fact, what I gave Tricia held some of the parts to the navigation system. They gave me part of it, and I brought it to a Whole Life Expo show in Las Vegas. So we have a really interesting thing going on because I'm being pulled from both sides. The government oftentimes would come to me and want to know what's going on with the Andromedans because somehow or other they know the Greys are giving them a line of BS, and that's pretty much where their constitution lies. When the Pleiadians presented themselves back in the 50s along with the Greys, Pleiadians did not offer the government at that time any sort of knowledge about propulsion systems and weaponry, and the Greys did. So obviously the government made the choice. So these are the kinds of things that I talk about and deal with. I'm kind of a hands-on person with physical consciousness, spiritual consciousness, and hardware and actual hardware of ships, real and whatever, you know. So that's kind of what I do. So I look forward to seeing you at 4 o'clock today. I'll be in the Shaw Room, and then I have a workshop tomorrow with some really interesting slides about 2 o'clock in lecture room 4. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Fred. I want to say a couple of things. It's about 12 minutes after 1. We probably have to break about 10 of 2 to let the next speaker come in. So we got about 35 minutes. So write your questions down, raise your hand. If you can try to do this kind of quietly, because I'm going to talk a little bit. Will the room monitors, where are my room monitors? Hold up your little paws. 1, could I have some of the wonderful women sitting at the back of the book table stand up and help? Cecilia, would you coordinate 2 or 3 of those women? Because we've got a lot of questions, and you can just bring them up and put them up on the table here. I would like to just tell you a couple of stories that I think you might find of interest.
Yeah, let me just finish the story.
I was recently on a radio show in Atlanta, and as all of these guys will tell you, you know, whenever you go on the radio, you'll have call-ins, and some of the people who call in are military. So I had 2 military people call in to the show where I was speaking, and both of them would not give their real names. They gave code names because, of course, you know, they were very skittish about what they had to share. I've become good friends with one of them now, and I know him, and he's actually gone through some regressions and discovered that he's had his own experiences. I'd like to just briefly share with you some of that information because some of it was kind of mind-blowing. The one that I have not met in person who continues to remain elusive told us, not on the air. He would not say this on the air. He only said this to us privately. I had invited another researcher on the radio show with me, so we talked with him on the phone afterwards. He said that in 1988, he was in British Honduras, and he was called. He did not know anything about UFOs, didn't believe in them, nothing. But there was a very large explosion of a craft that was hovering over that area, and they sent a little nuclear-tipped missile to destroy it. And he was pulled, along with about 7 other guys, by this plainclothes man who showed up, who they were told to just call Colonel. That's all they called him, Colonel. And they were driven to the crash site and told to pick up all the debris they could. And he, you know, was looking at all the strange debris, and, you know, still he didn't know what anything was. And he came to this point where he was about from here to where you are, and he saw this, like, little chair on the ground, and there was a being in the chair. And he said he just stopped, like, you know, I mean, his mouth fell open and he was so paralyzed. I mean, it so blew his sense of reality. It was like, is this a joke? Could this be real? What could it possibly be? I mean, it paralyzed him. He couldn't even move. And after he'd been standing there about 2 or 3 minutes, like realizing that this thing was moving and it was alive, it was a little being, this plainclothes colonel came up and tapped him on the shoulder and said, "You go over there and, you know, work on pulling this debris." And the colonel went over to the little being and pulled out a little kit, which is used for basically soldiers to take their own lives, you know, if you're in a painful death situation, and injected the little being with whatever this kit was. And then after the whole cleanup procedure, this fella and the other cleanup guys were taken with a body bag, and the colonel, the helicopter, then a plane, and then they wound up, he heard on the radio them saying Dreamland. He didn't even know where he was. He was in, you know, Honduras when it started. And then they were put through 2 weeks of debriefing where they were asked, "What did you see?" And he said, "Well, I went out there and I saw," and they were like, "No, you didn't. What did you see?" So after 2 weeks, it was like, "Okay, I got it. I didn't see anything." So that was one of the stories that they shared with us. And I'm sure that if he has that story, there are many, many thousands more abounding.
Trisha?
Yes.
Can I comment on this lady?
Yes. Yes, you may.
I just want to make a comment on this because I've been on the Laura Lee program. Does anybody listen to Laura Lee here in Seattle? I've been on the Laura Lee program a couple of times, and I actually spoke to Laura Lee at the end of last week. And someone just handed me this flyer here where they were interviewing a guy named Richard Souter on underground bases and tunnels. And a listener called in called Frank from Portland, who claimed to work with anybody heard this interview? This guy supposedly was a geologist for the U.S. Geological Survey. Well, number one, the guy who said he was a geologist for the U.S. Geological Survey said that that USGS had predicted a series of quakes and that they had like a 90% accuracy in predicting quakes. Flat out, not so. The U.S. Geological Survey, I get their reports every week. I get the seismic reports every week. I write a newsletter, for God's sakes, that has an immensely high track record for predicting major quakes. The United States Geological Survey has never successfully predicted a quake, ever. They tried to predict a quake in Parkfield and Cloverdale last year of a 6.5. They cleared out an area. They gave a 72-hour warning, and nothing happened. This fellow was also saying that they predicted the Kobe quake within 12-hour window. This is just nonsense. This is completely untrue. Now, in my predictions in my newsletter, I do think that the Landers area in Southern California is very, very hot, and I do believe that by the end of June, you will see a quake of about 6.8 to 7 in the Landers desert area. But this guy was saying that there's going to be a 9.0 in Palm Springs, that there's going to be a 9.5 12-hour time frame following the Palm Springs quake in the Seattle area, epicentered under Mount Rainier, and that within 72 hours, Mount Rainier will erupt. It's not true. It's just not going to happen that way. I do believe that you're going to have some problems with Mount Rainier, possibly later on this summer, and conceivably an eruption of Mount Rainier by 96. But volcanism is a very exact science now. And there will be warnings as to what's going to happen with the mountain. Yes, there's a hot zone on the mountain. Yes, they've cleared out certain areas that I've heard about on the mountain. And this is one of the reasons why I came to Seattle in the first place, was to research and maybe go up and have a little conversation with the mountain, so to speak. But it's just this thing that's been going around on the Laura Lee program. I don't know who this guy is, but he's lying.
Right.
He's lying.
Thank you, Sean, for addressing that. Cecilia, if you'd bring the questions over here, that would be great. And I'm while I'm looking at them to kind of sort them a little bit, Bob wants to make an additional comment.
Thank you. Yeah, while I got the mic, I want to say a couple of things again. There's going to be a demonstration in Washington, D.C. on the 29th of March being conducted by an organization that I respect, an organization called Operation Right to Know. There are handouts, there are little flyers throughout here, and any of you who either live in that area or have relatives or friends in that area, you might remind them about this. But it's another little gesture, another little attempt for we, the feeble people, to express our views against this government of ours. There's another issue that I feel very, very strongly about, that I'm very angry about, that I want to share with you. How many of you are aware of who John Mack is? Good. I know John, and I find him to be a delightful, wonderful, sensitive, thoughtful, brilliant human being. He's a professor at Harvard. He's written a book called Abductions. He's a man who puts his credibility and his honesty on the line time and time and time again. For those of you who remember seeing the famous four-hour miniseries by CBS a few years ago called Intruders, based on one of Bud's book, there was a character in there, Richard Crenna, played John Mack in that film, literally. But what I have to tell you is that John is under attack. There is a secret, consider this, secret faculty committee at Harvard that's trying to completely destroy John Mack because of his interest and his involvement in this subject. They're trying to take away his position. They're trying to deny his tenure. They're trying even to take away his license to practice medicine. A secret committee of faculty at Harvard. Now, if this doesn't smack of the Inquisition, I don't know what does. And many of us all over the country are responding to John's defense. And I have to tell you this, that if you're concerned and you're interested and you'd like to express a view, I encourage you to do so. Write a letter to the president of Harvard, as I did. Write a letter to the faculty committee, as I did. And let's do something to help John, because he's a delightful man. He doesn't deserve this. And if we let them get away with that, my God, what will they try next? Do they, have they forgotten Galileo? Have they forgotten, for God's sake, Bruno? And those were only a few years ago. And while I've got the mic, my wife insists that I tell you this. I have not written a book. But I have made a tape that my wife has in the back of the room. And for those of you who might not be able to get to the workshop, Cecilia has copies of it back there. The dark-haired lady in the back waving her arms frantically in the air. It's a tape I made that basically tells what I have to say, and I want to thank you all again.
Thank you, Bob. What we'll do with this is try to use the microphones on the table, and we're going to try to go through these as quick as we can, so try to keep your answers succinct, guys. This one, I think, is probably a Bud question. If anyone else wants to take it, great. How can we tell if our experience was truly a UFO experience or a vivid imagination? I was totally involved but not in control, and my husband slept on my, at my side. The question of was this real always remains.
Very good question, and obviously you have to look into each particular incident in detail. We're going to go into that at the workshop, but I want to say one quick thing. People will say that they have a nighttime experience. They don't know whether it's a dream or not. It seems dreamlike. There are three basic ways to go about helping yourself decide whether you had a dream or whether it was a real experience. First of all, in dreams, reality is very distorted. Your bedroom may have a 12-foot ceiling and be 30 feet long in the dream. Your real bedroom is going to look very different. If in this experience your bedroom looks exactly the way it looks in the real world, the windows in the right places, your bedroom slippers, etc., then it's a pretty good shot it wasn't a dream. It may feel like that, but if it looks right, it's not going to be probably a dream. The second thing, of course, is if you feel the senses completely in the dream, in the experience, it's probably not a dream. It's probably real. In other words, in a dream, you may imagine you're going down the street naked and be embarrassed, but you won't feel your feet cold, or you won't walk over gravel or something like that. If the full sensorium is there, it's probably not a dream. And, of course, the third thing is that most dreams take place in the daytime, daylight, in some other place. And obviously, if you're having some kind of an experience that in the middle of the night that is a daytime experience, it's probably a dream, not reality. That's one way to go about looking into that experience. But the answer to the question is far too complicated beyond that to go into.
You guys are just going to have to break down and come to these workshops.
Well, that was the bottom end of the UFO workshop and the show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Went a little over time, but who cares? It's fun. It's late night radio with Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy show. Thank you folks down there in Florida for supporting this and really, really getting a lot of support out of Florida now. Until next week, adios, hi-yo, silver.